From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football. How was that?
That was great. I like that.
Welcome, everyone. We're doing a show. So today was supposed to be the day that David and I went to lunch.
Uh-huh.
Apparently he has kids, and kids get sick.
Kids get ill.
And you can't just put them in the cage and leave water and food and just go out to lunch with me.
Well, no, you can. The problem is then it becomes a mess, and then they're too ill to clean up after themselves, right?
Yeah.
You know, like if a child vomits on themselves, you just make them clean it up themselves, right? You don't actually do it yourself. But you know, they're sick and then they can't do it. And then their cage is all messed up and the kennel's screwed up. And you know, it's just one thing after another with these kids.
Love it. We had a comment, Alex, Ryan has the flu, has the USC flu difficulties. No, apparently David's kid, maybe your kid was at USC practice
also,
and got the flu.
For those listening at home, I haven't showered this morning.
Oh, looking good.
So it's just great. Anyway.
That looks awesome. I got to show you my shirt, Mr. Woods. Can you see? It's the smile.
Smile it on.
Yes. I took my mom to the...
La Brea Tar Pits.
Yeah, La Brea Tar Pits. You haven't gone since you were a kid. I told David, correct, like off there, I like this stuff. Like, I mean, like dinosaurs and things are cool, but that's like millions of years ago. When you're talking like 10,000 years ago, where there's actual people and... you know, cool animals like sloths and mastodons and saber-toothed tigers and stuff. I don't know. It's just kind of cool. And the fact that like this massive collection, the biggest like Ice Age collection of fossils is in an urban area like Los Angeles. It's just like on Wilshire Boulevard. I just find that like fascinating. I think it's cool. David's like, you're an idiot. But I think it's cool.
I didn't say you were an idiot. I'm just like, that's not as much my thing, but I'm happy for you. That sounds like me, right? That's what I say in response.
Sure, that's what you would say. Yeah. But if you're a Big Ten fan visiting LA and you want to do something cool, like that whole area, like the Miracle Mile, like there's LACMA, which there's a lot of construction right now, so do it next year. But the Peterson Automotive Museum is on the corner there, Fairfax and in Wilshire. And then you can walk over to La Brea Tar Pits, which I like. There's a museum in there that's cool. I got this at the gift shop, which was great. Just a lot of cool LA stuff. Have you been to like the Ethiopian district on Fairfax? Like getting some?
Oh, yeah.
There's some.
Did you eat some
there.
Ethiopian food? Did you have some group bread, some sourdough bread items?
We did not. No, we didn't do that. I didn't take my mom there, but I do like going there. It's like
it's a whole stuff. Little
part on Fairfax. And they got that fake. It's so funny. I showed my mom, like, yeah, that's a fake cafe, but they use it for filming. So it's literally just a cafe on the corner of, I think it's Fairfax and Wilshire, that's just used for like filming purposes. It lights up and stuff, and kind of funny. But anyway, there's some LA stuff for you guys. Since it's rivalry week here in Los Angeles, this part.
Rivalry week.
The heart of Big Ten
country. It's rivalry week.
Yeah, we got an awesome slate of games with one like really featured
game. Including USC and UCLA.
Yes. We're not going to include that in the awesome slate of games. But if you want to email us, you can do that, big10cast@gmail.com. You can call or text us at 424-532-0678. I think we got a lot of emails to go through. Tweet at B1G Podcast. And if you have the Apple Podcasting app, we are still giving away Trader Joe's gift cards. I got a few more to send out. So thank you for leaving 5-star reviews and funny, you know, 5-star ratings and funny reviews. So we'll read those on the recap show. But keep leaving.
That's right.
Do we get any new ones yet or no?
We've gotten a couple new ones, but we're gonna save them in the hopper.
Sweet. And we are live on YouTube, and we're getting a bunch of comments in there. So if you want to leave a question in there, we'll get to that as well. Mark had a comment about the La Brea Tar Pit, so I have to put that up there. I haven't read it yet. I remember Bugs Bunny looking through the La Brea Tar Pits and ending up in Scotland. Oh, I don't remember that one. Yeah, it's just this weird, cool thing that's like, oh, wait, this isn't like a Ripley's Believe It or Not on Hollywood Boulevard. This is like the La Brea Tar Pits there because this is where freaking animals 50,000 to 10,000 years ago like got stuck in the tar and then were preserved forever. And they have a lot of bird. So bird fossils are difficult because, you know, their bones are so brittle and they're, you know, hollow. But they're preserved in the tar. So there's tons of bird fossils in there too. The dire wolves. Dire wolves look cool. Why don't we have sloths anymore? Sloths were really badass too. And of course,
sloths exist. There's still sloths.
I know, but not the way it was back then. And then the saber-tooth stuff. Like, why don't we have tigers with those kind of tusks like that? I love that stuff. And our elephants back then were way more badass.
Mid hair.
Yeah. The mammoths. They're woolly. Yeah.
They're woolly.
They're woolly. All right. Well, sorry. Just going off on all that fun stuff.
We could just let you talk about the La Brea Tar Pits.
And my Smilodon shirt. I like my shirt. That's good.
Well, if we want to talk about fossilized things, should we just jump right to the USC-UCLA game?
We could do that. But yeah, so we're going to talk about the slate of games for week 13. Some good stuff. Should we just jump into it, David?
Let's jump right in. Let's jump deep into the deep end.
Okay. We got two teams on byes this week. We have...
What? Oregon Ducks.
We got them at number one, and then we also have the number eight team,
Washington Huskies.
Cool. So though they're going to play next week, so they get a bye, kind of rest up for that big game, and then we start on Friday night. First up, we've got
Purdue Boilermakers
at
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
Yeah. All right, so this game is 5 p.m. on Friday on Big Fox. Purdue, which is currently 1-9, traveling to Michigan State. Michigan State still has bowl eligibility as a real possibility. They're 4-6. They are 13.5-point favorites. Ryan, when was the last time Purdue showed a pulse in a football game?
When they fired Graham Harrell and scored 49 points. I forget who against it was. They lost.
Illinois.
50-49, yeah. They covered that.
Since then, well, so you missed one. At home against Northwestern, they lost by 6.
Okay.
But in the three other games, again, against, you know, all top five opponents, Oregon, Ohio State, and Penn State, they have scored a combined 10 points, and that was all came against Penn State last week. And they've been they've allowed 129 points in those three games to Oregon, Ohio State, and Penn State. Now, Michigan State, they're not great. They're not any of those teams. But even before that, Wisconsin beat this team by 46 points. Notre Dame beat this team by 59 points. I would need to have seen anything, any sign of life whatsoever from Purdue in the last few games, anything really, to pick them here. And I haven't. And that's not to say Michigan State is great. I would not be surprised if Michigan State suddenly, you know, Aiden Childs throws three picks, fumbles it in a weird way. And they're not very good in this game, and they don't cover. But, like, as far as which team has shown life at all recently, it's Michigan State. So I'm going to go with the team that's shown, you know, the barest form of a pulse.
Yeah. And I think there's more upside with Michigan State. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure what to make of Purdue. Like, literally scoring 49 points in a game when your defensive-minded head coach was calling the plays after you fire your offensive coordinator, and then going to the tent, getting shut out after that. I'm not sure what to make of Purdue. They could show up a little bit, and Michigan State, like you said, could fumble it away a bunch of times. But, you know, last week I thought they played decent, right? And I just think they're going to – it's at Michigan State. They still could make a bowl, so they're going to be trying in this one. I'm not sure how much Purdue's going to be trying. So we'll be on the same one on this one. Forgot to mention at the top, so if you're looking at our picks, last week I did better. Dave was on a good roll there, and I got a few back last week. But just 7 games over 500, 57, 50, and 1. Dave is 53, 54, and 1, so just one under 500. So if you want to go along with our picks, write them down as we're going, and you can go over to my bookie. Use the promo code POC, and you can get a 100% deposit match for whatever you put in there. So if you're going to, you know, deposit $100, you can use promo code POC for Podcast of Champions, and you will get $200 in there. And then you could bet, if you want to bet against me, against Dave, with either one of us, with us both, against us both, whatever you want to do, you can do that. And you can bet all kinds of stuff, David. Like, it doesn't have to just be the lines like we do. You could do over-unders. You could do first half, second half. And we love the casinos. You could do the live casino in there, play a little baccarat, play some blackjack. Got your head, which game you play in Vegas, David, if you just had to play one for the rest of your life?
Craps.
Craps, yeah, probably would be. Blackjack is probably one I play the most, but craps is pretty fun too. So, but
craps,
yeah,
craps is where the highs and lows are. It's where the joys and the sorrow is.
Yeah. But go over to MyBookie and use promo code POC because you can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only at MyBookie.
Beautiful read. Top 10. No notes.
All right. Let's go to Saturday's games. So we're both in agreement on our first pick. We'll see where we go from here.
Can we start with the headliner? UCLA-USD, or do we want to start at the beginning of the day with that other game?
Let's start at the beginning of the day.
Okay, fine. Well, I'll save the best for last, I guess.
There's three of them at the same time slot, so I'll go in the order of importance. So first up we have...
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
They're going to be on the road taking on...
Rutgers Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
All right, this is, as Ryan said, at 9 a.m. This is on Peacock. I don't know why you'd stick this thing on Peacock. There can't be a better game on at this time. Number 25, back to being ranked, Illinois, traveling to Rutgers. Rutgers is a one-point home dog against the Fighting Illini. Rutgers has shown signs of life of late. They have looked somewhat fixed from their major injury issues midseason. Looked very good last week in beating Maryland, but Illinois has also looked kind of fixed from their midseason lull. They look once again like a solid, well-coached team, which they kind of always have been, but the offensive issues that were plaguing them midseason seem to have been kind of worked out to an extent. I think we're in for a good game here. The main thing here is I'm going to take Rutgers because it's home field. But I think this is kind of a classic pick'em for me. I think Illinois, they've got a good passing offense. And Rutgers, their passing defense is better than their rushing defense, but it's still not great. But on the other side, you know, Rutgers has a really good running attack and Illinois has got a horrible rushing defense. So I think it could end up somewhat weirdly higher scoring than you might expect. But I'm going to take Rutgers here. You know, they're the home team. I think they've got a decent chance of winning, so I'll take them.
Yeah, both teams sort of on a high, right? Rutgers gets the win at Maryland. And we saw last week Illinois took care of business at home against Michigan State. I got that one right, and you had Michigan State there. I'm going to ride with Illinois again in this one. I feel like, you know, it's a pick 'em. You know, essentially a 1-point spread here with Rutgers favored by, Illinois favored by a point. On the road, I saw UCLA go into Rutgers and get a win. So I think Illinois, they had a couple clunkers in there, but I think they figured some stuff out. So I'm going to go with the Illini going in to Piscataway and getting the big win.
We're picking different.
Picking different in that game. All right, we have another 9 a.m. game. You don't want to miss this one.
Iowa Hawkeyes.
And they're going to be on the road taking on
Maryland Terrapins. Snap, snap,
snap, snap, snap. All right, this is at 9 a.m. on the Big Ten Network. Again, I just don't know why something like this would be relevant to the Big Ten Network. There couldn't possibly be a better game on at this time. Iowa traveling to Maryland. Maryland is a 6.5-point home dog. So, like, just out of hand, I should acknowledge I'm taking Iowa here, mostly because Maryland looks fully and completely broken. However, and this is the major caveat, Iowa's quarterback situation is currently very uncertain.
Yeah.
Brendan Sullivan suffered an ankle injury, I think, against UCLA, and he's now out for the rest of the year. Cade McNamara's status is still uncertain as of, I think, yesterday. So it's still a pretty cloudy situation, according to Kirk Ferentz. McNamara had a concussion, and so it's an open question whether he's going to be available. So that could leave Jackson Stratton. He's the preferred walk-on who, again, I think I'm quoting it correctly, was playing some scout team linebacker at one point this year.
I think
year.
So. I think you're right.
He may end up being the starter. Watched him against UCLA. You never know when a backup comes in at the end of a game, whether it's that guy's good or whether it's just the defense didn't have time to scout him and they don't really know what they're looking at. He made some throws and he looked okay. I think for Iowa, they're going to have to lean on their run game in this one. But I haven't seen enough from Maryland lately to think they
take
can
advantage
hang.
Of any of that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. They seem broken in some fundamental ways. Maybe if they got USC on the schedule again, they'd be able to beat them. But aside from that, I mean, they haven't looked like a complete football team in any other game in the last six. So, I'll take Iowa -6.5. That's fine.
Matthew, our Big Ten insider, says his brother goes to Iowa and is hearing Cade probably plays. And then Dylan from Albuquerque, Maryland has lost 5 of 6 and all by 14 plus points. Is that one win over USC? I think it was. I'm going to take Iowa in this one as well. David, did you freeze? Oh, no. Okay. I was like, what is he looking at? I'm like, did he just freeze there?
I would never freeze on you. No, I had a text message. We have other jobs, and you know, sometimes people send us stuff that we have to read.
Yes.
Talking.
We do that sometimes. So I'm going to go with you on this one. Dylan said, it's not been a pretty stretch for Maryland. To have this be under a touchdown, I'm going to take Iowa, even if it's on the road, even if the quarterback situation is up in the air. So, yeah, we'll both be on Iowa for this one. Curious where.
All right, so should we just skip to the 12:30 games?
Should we do some 12:30 games? Oh, wait, there's one more. This is probably on ESPN +.
The Ocho. Yeah.
The Ocho. Yeah, sure. Okay. We got number 5.
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey, folks. I'm from Indiana.
And we have number 2.
The Ohio State Buckeyes.
Yeah, for some reason, this is on national TV. 9 a.m. on Big Fox. Number 5, Indiana at number 2, Ohio State. Indiana undefeated. Ohio State with the one loss on the road to Oregon. Ohio State is very disrespectfully and positively, I'm worried, actually, for the odds makers, because Kurt Cignetti is, what is he, Ryan?
He knows the score. He gets the women. Cignetti kills.
Yeah, I think he's going to feel disrespected by this line, and I pity the odds makers. Ohio State's a 13.5-point home favorite.
What?
Look, could Ohio State cover this? Absolutely. That Ohio State defense is nails. They have been great this year, and the offense is no slouch either. But Indiana has literally the number one offense in the country, according to success rate. And they've got a top 10 defense themselves. I think quite literally the best passing attack in the country. And yeah, this isn't, they've played some weaker competition, but I'm talking like, you know, some of this stuff is opponent adjusted and they're still, kicking butt. So I I get the line. If you look at like Bill Connolly's SP Plus, that'd be about where it would have this game with home field advantage built in. But a lot of those analytic systems are carrying over still Indiana history stuff that doesn't matter. because Kurt Cignetti's coaching that team now, and he brought in a bunch of transfers.
He was given an offer he couldn't refuse. He knows the score. He gets the women, and he kills the bad guys. Cignetti. Cignetti
kills. That's right. That's right. Cignetti kills. So I'm taking Indiana, obviously, here. That's the theme of this show. I don't know if they win. I think it's going to be a really good game, though. I wish it was a primetime game. I know a lot of Ohio State fans are really annoyed by the number of 9 a.m. games. And I think for college football fans generally, it would be better if this was, the 4:30 or 5 o'clock game where you're, sitting down with, some beer and hanging out. But it'll be a good way to kick off the day. I think it's going to be a really good game. And I'm 100% taking those points.
Yeah, me too. Kyle mentioned in the chat about Joey Galloway saying Indiana should sit their quarterback, Curtis Rourke for, to save him. And it's just so dumb. Like, that's not, if you knew this guy.
God has mercy.
Cignetti.
Don't.
Cignetti kills.
Does that sound like a guy that's going to sit his quarterback? Like, hell no.
No.
There's a non-zero chance that Indiana wins this game. There's non-zero chance that the Ohio State just blows them out. Things don't go Indiana's way. And then everyone.
Yeah, they could blow their doors off. Yeah. I mean,
and people will make Ohio all these State, assumptions from that. And, but
Ohio State is a much more talented team. I don't think there's any question about that. Like, what they have at receiver is something that Indiana really hasn't faced this year. Just the depth of talent there. And I think it could bend their defense in ways that they're not expecting. But I've also seen Ohio State somewhat play down to their competition at times, especially offensive versus other teams' defenses. Not to a huge extent, but sometimes. And Indiana's extremely well coached. Extremely well coached.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a reasonable chance that with, their quarterback, with their own receiver talent, with their, tandem pretty good running backs, that they're able to hang in there, keep pace, and maybe pull it out in the end. But I think at the worst, keep this to a 7 to 10 point game.
Yeah, I'm with you with that one. Last week, Indiana's coming off a bye, so all the focus being on this game, and you got a killer as your coach. Like, that bye's going to help. Sometimes byes are bad. I think this bye's going to be good. Last week, Ohio State didn't cover the 28.5 in Wrigley Field. So yeah, I'm going to take Indiana here as well. Hold on, we got to play one more. Cam says the long version of Sig Kills is incredible, so we'll do it for you one more time.
He was given an offer he couldn't refuse. He knows the score. He gets the women, and he kills the bad guys. Cignetti. Cignetti kills.
That's pretty badass. So should we just end the show? Like, I think that's the end of the show. No, we got more. But obviously, that's a big one. Can't wait to see that. Where are you watching it, David? Do you know?
I haven't decided. We were going to coordinate on that.
We could watch it together, maybe.
We could. That would be nice. Are bars even open at 9 a.m.? They probably are.
Yeah.
There's probably places with TVs we could go.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. Or we could just pop some champagne, have some mimosas.
That could be fun.
Yeah,
we do have a game at 7:30 though that we both have to cover. So yeah. I don't know if starting the day off with mimosas is going to get us there in time.
And it might be raining.
Yeah,
rain in LA for a USC UCLA. Ugh, that's good. Okay, let's go to our next one. We got three more games in the 12:30 slot. First up, we have
Penn State Nittany Lions.
Rawr. They're on the road taking on
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Yeah, Penn State traveling to Minnesota at 12:30. This one is going to be on CBS. That's number 4 Penn State. Put some respect on their name. Minnesota's a 12.5 point home dog, which feels a little bit nuts to me. Minnesota's been solid.
Yeah.
It's kind of solid as hell this year. Okay, they lost the last time we saw them, but that was to a somewhat resurgent Rutgers team. It was on the road and they lost by a touchdown. I think it's going to be a different deal for them at home. They've They lost to Iowa at home early in the season, but they figured some things out after that. I think the Michigan State, the Michigan game kind of jump started them, and then they won four straight. And that Rutgers game was winnable. They just kind of couldn't pull it out in the end. I don't think they beat Penn State, but I don't know. I kind of like them to cover. I mean, Penn State, look, Penn State last time we saw them, I don't know if it was last week. Did they have a bye last week?
Minnesota did. Minnesota had
anyway. Yeah, Penn State last time we saw them blew the doors off of Purdue, and yes, they also blew out Washington the week before. So maybe they have figured some things out, and they are ready to start just blowing teams out. But I'm going to need three data points before I start saying Penn State is ready to kill teams. And I think to beat Minnesota by a couple of touchdowns, they will have had to have killed them. So I'm going to take Minnesota here.
I am too. I mean, it'd be nice if it was up in the 14-ish range, but this is, you know, could Penn State win by 14 or 17? Sure. I mean, they could win by a bunch, but I feel like coming off the bye, Minnesota is coming into this. You know, there's going to be motivation there, and I think they can stay close with a team like this. Penn State's blowing out like bad teams. You know, this is a decent team, and you know, we had them up to number five. I think it's where do we have them now? We have Minnesota at seven. Yeah, I think they can make feisty at home and keep this close. Maybe have like a 3-point lead at halftime or something, and Penn State wins, but it's sort of like a 7-point game or something like that. I could see that happening.
And Minnesota's just solid. Like they're just kind of solid across the board. They've got a pretty decent running game. They've got a pretty decent passing game. They've got a pretty decent rush defense. They've got a pretty decent pass defense. Like they're not, there isn't some like this egregious weakness that you can exploit. So I think it's going to be kind of a grinding game. You know, I think Penn State's going to win, but I think it's going to be a grinder. And I think, you know, James Franklin is comfortable playing grinders like those, you know, that happens with some frequency with Penn State. And I think that's where this one will end up.
Yeah. All right. Moses, parking in the Rose Bowl in the rain. Shoot me now. Yeah.
I don't have to go.
You should. No. But you don't. Okay. Next up, we got
Northwestern Wildcats.
On the road, taking on
Michigan Wolverines.
12:30 p.m. on FS1, Northwestern traveling to Michigan. Michigan is a 10.5 point home favorite, Ryan. I don't know, man. What have you seen from Michigan this year to justify them being favored by that amount over anybody?
Last couple games they've played. I mean, they had a bye week last week, but I think they've played better. Maybe figuring out the quarterback a little bit more.
Okay. But let's delve into that playing better thing. Okay. Indiana, they lost by 5 in a game that I think the post game win expectancy had them losing by 14.
All right.
They lost by 21 to Oregon at home.
Yeah, I mean, it's freaking Oregon. Like,
I guess my point is here, they've won 2 games this year by double digits. One was Arkansas State by 10, and the other one was that Fresno State game at the beginning of the year, where if you remember watching that game, they absolutely should not have won that one by 20. It was a much closer game than that ended up looking. The rest of their wins are by like 3 points, and obviously they've lost a lot. Northwestern is not great. And, you know, we've talked about like when they win games, it's just kind of, you know, some BS outcome. but man, I don't know. I'm trying to talk myself into this one, but then I'm looking and it's just, you know, how are they going to score? They struggled to score on Iowa. Yeah, they struggled to score on Iowa, and Iowa is actually not that great defensively this year. They struggled to score on Wisconsin. They struggled to score on Ohio State, but everyone does. I guess I'll take Michigan. I don't feel good about it because I just don't know where they come up with the offense to do it. But being that it's on the road, Northwestern has not been very good on the road except against Maryland, which is a broken team.
I got Michigan, so if you want to go against me, you can. Depends.
No, I'll take Michigan. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, Northwestern covered last week against Ohio State and Wrigley Field. And yes, you're right. I mean, Michigan hasn't pulled away and blown teams out. But they played, you know, better competition recently, and they looked like more of a viable team than maybe some of the earlier on games. I just think they're going to be better at home and kind of run away with this one a little bit. But who knows? We'll see. I mean, Northwestern, we've seen them pull stuff out of their butt that, you know, you didn't expect. And they could certainly do something here. It would be a really big blow if Michigan loses to Northwestern at home. But 10.5 is a lot. But I still feel like Michigan's going to cover this one.
Yeah, I think they could just sit on them. I don't think Michigan's defense is great this year, but I think they could just stifle Northwestern's ability to do much of anything.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. All right, got a couple more to get to. First up,
Wisconsin Badgers.
On the road, taking on
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
This game, what I'll call the Battle of the Broken QBs, 12:30 p.m. on the Big Ten Network, Wisconsin at Nebraska. Nebraska is currently a 2.5-point home favorite. Both of these quarterbacks, I think, are in major distress. Watching them play football is kind of upsetting. They're both making kind of critical mistakes. They both look like they're playing a little bit scared. I don't know where they get passing offense. So then you look at the running games and, Wisconsin's rush offense is better. It just kind of fundamentally is. Nebraska, you know, Dante Dowdell, it just seems like he really wants to find somebody to hit, which is a great mentality for playing defense. Not so great if you're the running back. But then which rush defense is better? It's probably Nebraska's. You know, Wisconsin's definitely given up some chunk yardage on the ground. I think it's going to be a very, very run-heavy game because I don't think either of these two programs really trust their quarterback at this point. So I'm guessing low scoring, but I'm also guessing a close game. And what do we know about Nebraska in close games, Ryan?
They do not win.
Yeah, give me Wisconsin.
Take it Wisconsin as well.
I don't feel good about this, by the way. Look, I like Wisconsin fans, but I'm starting to feel like knock on trauma from Nebraska fans who are now like staring down the barrel of yet again not making a bowl game. But close games, man, I mean, it's just a real thing at this point. And also, yeah, I just trust that Wisconsin running game a little bit more. And Nebraska's defense has just been too inconsistent. It's been up some games and played very well, and then it's been very down some games, and it just seems like from game to game it could vary drastically. So I don't love Wisconsin, but I think I trust them more in this game than Nebraska.
And obviously keeping it close with Oregon last week, you know, there's a lot of things that sort of had to happen for that to be the case. But Nebraska just looks like a more broken team than Wisconsin. To start off 5-1, knowing that of all Power Four teams, you know, you have the longest bowl-less streak. And then to go 5-1 going, all right, we got this. We're finally going to go to a bowl. And it might not happen again. Like, this is Lucy pulling the ball away from Charlie Brown. Again, just you really thinking I'm going to kick the field goal this time. Like, I'm really, really, really going to kick it. 5-1, rut-row. And now, you know, this is not good. But I just like Wisconsin in this situation. You're getting a couple 2.5 points. I don't know if it matters, like you said, because the close games Nebraska loses. But I just feel like they're playing better football right now. And there could be, you know, such a disappointment after not being able to get the upset over Oregon. You can come down. It could be coming off that high. Seeing Nebraska in person They just didn't like take advantage of some of the opportunities in those games. I think Wisconsin will give them some chances, but I think Nebraska is going to give some chances too. And I think just Wisconsin will take advantage of those a little bit more. So give me the points. I'll take Wisconsin on the road. I feel bad. I was rooting for Nebraska this year to make a bowl game, but it's not looking good right now.
No.
All right. We got one last one. We've got
USC Trojans.
on the road in the Rose Bowl, taking on
UCLA Bruins.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. You can feel the drama. You can feel the magic. 7:30 p.m. on NBC. 5-5 USC on the road at 4-6 UCLA. This is a battle for bowl eligibility, Ryan. UCLA is a 4.5-point home dog. Okay. All right. So I'm going to start with soft stuff because the soft stuff is, I think, plays a role in this game a lot.
Okay.
Which team cares more about this outcome? The team that was touted as a playoff contender preseason, or the one that nobody expected anything from and has a chance for bowl eligibility? Like, does USC even want to make a bowl? Do they care? Do any of the players give, like, the slightest shit?
I think they talk about it like they think they do. But I think UCLA is the more motivated team.
Yeah, I think they've got a first-year head coach who could make his
bones.
Who
played in this rivalry. He played.
And they could make their bones with a 6-6. So the soft stuff, and it's also at home, you know, all that kind of crap. The soft stuff, I think, favors UCLA slightly. The on-field stuff, I think, is kind of drastically in favor of USC. So they made a quarterback change to Jaden Maiava. USC did. I think he is a critical mistake waiting to happen. I think he's...
How many Aiden Childs is he? Is he like...
What? He's got a little. He's got a little Aiden Childs to him. There's a little bit of that to him. Gunslinger is the charitable way to describe it, but I would describe him as decision making still on the very beginning of the learning curve. But he does give an element with his legs. The thing that I think this matchup presents more of, though, is it leans into the problem that Lincoln Riley's had all year, which is that he wants to throw the ball no matter what. UCLA might reward that because the Bruins, they're pretty good defending the rush. Don't pay attention to success rates. It counts too much from the beginning of the year when they were playing a bunch of really hard teams. But the last, I don't know, five games, this rush defense has been pretty good. The pass defense, though, still has some issues. And I think USC, they've got a pretty stout offensive line that protects the quarterback pretty well. I mean, I think they're top 10 nationally in sack rate allowed. Like, this is a good offensive line, good at protecting the quarterback. UCLA is not good at rushing the passer. Jaden Maiava is probably going to be pretty clean in this game. And if he's pretty clean, maybe his decision-making is a little bit better. He takes advantage of matchups against the corners for UCLA, and they're able to drive down the field a little bit. I think Akaika Maloy is a good defensive coordinator, though. I think the defense is going to be sound. I don't see them giving up a ton of busts. So it'll require, you know, not methodical marching downfield, but they'll have to do it in, you know, a chunk here, 4 yards here, chunk there, 4 yards here. Could it lead to mistakes for Maiava? Yeah, sure. It probably will. There'll probably be a couple of turnovers. But I think they will be able to move the ball. I think they will be able to score in their kind of customary, you know, high 20s range. And then the question becomes, can UCLA keep pace? And so much of this is Ethan Garber's. And so much of that is, can UCLA protect him? USC isn't a good pass rush. Like, no. They haven't been great at getting after the quarterback, but neither was Washington, and Washington had 6 sacks against UCLA last week because UCLA was down to their fourth string left tackle, who's a walk-on. Second walk-on, who's started at left tackle this year for UCLA. We don't know yet if there's any improved health on the left tackle front. Nicky Prongos, who went down 2 weeks ago against Iowa, he still wasn't back in practice yesterday, so I would put it at pretty doubtful, and I think they will be starting to walk on at left tackle. And with that, I think USC is going to be able to get a little bit of pressure on Garbers, and then it's just a question of whether he, who has struggled a lot under pressure this year and been a lot better when the pocket is clean, can summon a little bit of that, I don't know what you call it, intestinal fortitude. Maintain his internal clock even when pressure is coming around him and deliver the ball downfield. UCLA can have some matchup advantages in the secondary. They've got some talented receivers and a very talented tight end in Maliki Matavao. If Garbers can get him the ball, they can keep pace. But if he's, you know, constantly under duress, it could be bad. So all that babble being said, I think the motivation does lie with UCLA. I think I like USC like 24-20, which barely gives UCLA the cover, but I will take UCLA and the points in this one.
Great analysis, Mr. Woods. You know, I'm going to go with you as well with taking UCLA and the points, different reasons probably, but no, I agree with what you're saying. And when we talked about, we both did our question exchange for this game and there was some funny, you know, back and forth stuff in there, but just the point of Nebraska had some opportunities to turn, you know, Jaden Myles' 2-turnover night into like a 4-turnover night. PFF had him at 3 turnover worthy plays, which is the most of any, like USC, Miller Moss never had more than 2. Even the game.
How did they only have him as 3?
I don't know. That's what PFF had. Like that.
Because he turned it over twice, and there were 2 other balls that easily should have been picked by Nebraska.
So there's sometimes if you throw a pick, but it like bounces off the receiver's hands, they don't call it a turnover worthy play. That wasn't the case here. Like both, I think both of his turnovers were turnover worthy, and then they gave him 1 more. I think you're right. There could have been 2. So, but 3 was the most USC's had, and you know UCLA's pass defense isn't great, but I feel like they could make some play. They got some guys that could make plays on the ball. And do that, but I kind of like USC in a close one, but I'm going to take the points. Here's what's happened, David. So USC has been on the road. They were on the road at Michigan, Minnesota, Maryland, and Washington. Well, what
did they win any of those?
Well, before we get to what they won, they were favored in all of those.
Oh, okay.
And they lost them all outright. They are now a road favorite. Is it a road game? I don't. Is it actually closer to USC, the Rose Bowl? Like the drive, if you left USC or the Westwood campus of UCLA, like I wonder, it depends on traffic, like the time of day, like which way, who would get there faster?
I don't think so. Road games in general, I don't think they have actually much to do with that part of it. I think when you get into time zone travel, it matters, but the home field advantage is real in this rivalry. It always has been.
Yeah.
UCLA plays a lot better at the Rose Bowl than it plays at the Coliseum. And it's weird. It doesn't make much sense unless you like just, well, it's a different environment. And I think that's more what it is, where it's a break of routine. You have hostile fans who are going to be yelling during your, you know, third downs and that kind of stuff. So I think, you know, those factors do matter. And they do add up to a couple of points. So, I do think that it's a real thing in the history of this thing. As much as we joke about it, like USC plays a lot better at the Coliseum and UCLA plays a lot better at the Rose Bowl.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a road game, but you know, obviously it's not the same, a traditional kind of road game, cause you're still taking a bus or whatever, but, they haven't won on the road. Certainly haven't covered. So I'm going to take UCLA in the points. There's just too much of a trend to not do that. Like, hey man, whatever it is, they're away from home. They've played better. USC's played better at home. I mean, we saw the same thing with Washington. Like, win at home, lose on the road. It's been pretty consistent. So until that changes, I'm not going to predict it's going to. So I will take UCLA and the points as well.
That seems right to me.
All right. Well, that's all our picks. So why don't we take a quick break? We got a lot of questions. There's a ton of emails. So I think, let's see. Where do we got? Okay. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll look at all these questions.
We've got a lot of questions.
Yeah. All right. Back in a minute. All righty. We're back here on the Podcast of Champions. What do we do, David? We talk all things Big Ten football. It's a fun week. Let me mark down when we took our break here. But we do have a lot of questions to get to. Hope you liked our previews. Hope you can go check out our friends over at MyBookie for all the fun stuff you can do in this game. I think the first question is from a UCLA Bruins fan, Daver.
He's not a UCLA Bruins fan. That's the subject.
Oh, the subject is UCLA Bruins fan. Okay. This is the first one, I believe, right? Okay, so he says, overheard some Bruins fans chatting Friday night. UCLA's original mascot was a grizzly. They changed it when joining the PCC, the Pacific Coast Conference, because, and this is all caps, Montana was already the Grizzlies. They let UC Berkeley students come up with their new mascot, Bruin. Is any of what I heard true? I had a hard time believing all of that. How could Montana, fearing unserious, how can a Montana fearing unserious program have more natties than Oregon? From Daver.
So the Montana fearing unserious program here being the UCLA Bruins. I believe that's true. That is my recollection of the facts and events. And I was alive for it. So, you know, that's a primary source because I am in my early 100s. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the UCLA Grizzlies versus the UCLA Bruins. I don't know. I don't know which sounds better. A Grizzly is certainly easier to explain to people because a Bruin is just, I mean, it's a mythical bear. Basically.
Yeah.
So a Grizzly, you know, a grizzly will mess you up. A Bruin, you know, you only see that on the pages of literature. That's why I liked switching it to the UCLA Laser Bears some time ago. That's the way to go.
Did they vote on that?
Flying bears with laser eyes. No, sadly, they haven't voted on that. I'm hoping it gets to a referendum at some point.
Okay.
This is from D. Nee, I think is how you pronounce that. Minus 20, Vegas is disrespectful. Last year, Oregon was a 13.5-point favorite on a neutral site in Vegas. Saying this 6-5 UW team is only 3 points worse than last year is a major indictment on college football. Is this just a fluke year, or has NIL and realignment finally ruined our sport? Appreciated, D-Nee.
D-Nee. So we don't know the line for, I guess, maybe that's the early line?
I'm sure there's an early line, yeah.
Yeah. We'll get to that next week, you know.
We sure will.
Yeah, I've not been good with Oregon in the, if they're going to blow teams out or not. Have you been good, or you've been better than me, maybe?
I think I've been slightly better, but it's been challenging and they haven't played great as well.
Because you got the point shaving, obviously.
Yeah, the point shaving's been a problem.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. This is Dylan from Albuquerque. He's in the chat and also in our email box. Gentlemen, can you believe it's already week 13? Only two more full Saturdays of football left before the end of the regular season. We all need to enjoy these last 2 weeks, because for me at least, it has flown by way too fast. A couple of questions. Is a couple, can three be a couple?
No.
Okay.
Three is a few.
So we're going to ding you for saying a couple and then having three. But yeah, that's okay, Dylan. We love you because you're in the chat. Number one, the traditional high-powered Lincoln Riley offense has only scored 40-plus points twice this season versus Utah State and Rutgers, with UCLA being the last inferior opponent on the schedule. What do you think the chances are that the Trojans eclipse 40 or more points at the Rose Bowl Saturday night? Riley's previous low of 40-point games in a regular season as a head coach was 5 games, both in 2020 and 2021 at Oklahoma.
I won't rule it out, but I'd be pretty surprised.
I would too. I don't think Riley's going to get to 40. That's just not been their MO. Like, it's not even – yeah, it's just not been what they've been doing this year. It's been more like – playing defense, good punting. It's like more field position kind of stuff than what we've seen in the past.
Well, and I could see it also being like, if that happens, it's going to be some defensive scores where like Garvers throws a pick six or something.
Yeah, you would probably need something like that, or a kickoff return for a touchdown or something. Yeah. All right, number two, with this being the first year of the expanded 12-team playoff and with the regular season almost complete, do you feel that the importance of the regular season as a whole has been at all hampered by the fact that the two losses does not automatically eliminate a team from playoff contention? You hate it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I do think the importance of the regular season has been hampered because you've still got Alabama with a really good chance of making the playoff. That sucks.
They got the inside track to like win the SEC still. So
I mean, they went to Vanderbilt and lost.
Yeah.
Whatever. It takes some getting adjusted to, I guess. But it does, I think, diminish a lot of these games that felt like they mattered. Now it feels kind of NFLized. Like, who cares who beat the Patriots when they were whatever 13-3 1 year? Because the Patriots still won the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? Like, now Vanderbilt knocking off Alabama is just a footnote. It's not, oh yeah, that completely derailed Alabama's season and they couldn't go to the playoff, or they couldn't go to the BCS, or they couldn't make it to a major bowl game. So yeah, I do think it's diminished the regular season.
I disagree. I mean, I like it. There's a lot more sort of drama. And for Vanderbilt, like, they're probably making t-shirts that they beat Alabama still. And even if Alabama wins the SEC, heck, wins the national championship, I think it matters to Vanderbilt that they got that win. I think it's –
I don't give a shit who it matters – like, if it matters to Vanderbilt fans. I'm talking about it matters to college football, like the state of the sport. Like, I watch these games, or I watch, you know, upsets happen, and I'm rooting for the upset because I want it to matter. Like, it doesn't matter that Vanderbilt beat Alabama. It does not matter. It simply does not matter to anyone except the, like, you know, 40,000 Vanderbilt fans who watched it, because it has no impact. Yeah. Alabama's going to be able to make the playoff easily.
Mark said Bama versus UGA meant nothing. I mean,
also true. Yeah. And Georgia, Texas meant nothing. Like, these games don't mean anything. If you're just going to give a bunch of two and maybe even a three loss SEC team, playoff berths.
I would like to see, and you know, if it's a muddled mess with a bunch of two loss teams and you're arguing they should be in over a 11-1 Indiana team or whatever, I would hate that. I don't want to see Indiana get knocked off of this. I think the SEC does need to have that ninth game to, so you can a little bit more separation, because it's just too jumbled at the top when you get four crappy out of conference games and then only eight conference games. And then sometimes you're missing all the good teams. And so, yeah, there's like a lot of weird stuff going on there, but I'd like to see them play a nine game schedule to make it a little bit more even. I think some of this would, you know, fix itself if you just played nine games instead of eight.
Yeah.
Number three, SEC coaches are claiming making the SEC championship game as a two-loss team would be a detriment to their team's playoff hopes if they lose. And they would rather avoid making the SEC championship game and sit at home to guarantee finishing with a two losses max. It does look like the same logic can be applied to the Big Ten championship game.
Does not.
I'm sorry. This does not look like the same because you don't think a two-loss team would make the game. But the same situation could happen in future years. Should they just abolish conference championship games and start the playoffs sooner? I think so.
Shit, why even have any games? Just start the playoffs. No, like, have a preseason where everyone gets warmed up, and then just start the playoff at 128 teams in early October, and then just once you're done and out of the playoff, you don't play anymore. Because the only thing that matters is the playoff, ever, now.
So David hates, like, the playoff, by the way.
Doing away with conference championship games when you have an 18-team league or a 16-team league, just makes it so you're going to have just unbalanced nonsense. Indiana, by virtue of having to play Ohio State, is in a position where it'll have to prove it on the field. But if they didn't have to play Ohio State, where's their big win? Where's their win over an actual contender? And so they would just have an easy through line to the conference title by virtue of having played nobody. And there's going to be unbalanced schedules every single year. No, you still need conference title games. You need them now more than ever. If you actually want to care, or if anybody at all cares anymore about conference championships, and the playoff does because they have automatic berths.
Yeah.
But these teams might not. I mean, would it behoove Indiana to, you know, make a conference title game this year? Like, say they, I don't know if there's a scenario where they lose to Ohio State and they still make the conference title game, but say there is, would it behoove them to go to it and play in it? Probably not. Yeah. But it's, I don't know. We've made a very stupid system. I think people will eventually agree, but they need to see it happen a few times. But it's the only solution now is, because there's never going to be contraction of it. The only solution now is to continually expand it. And that's going to make all of this stuff matter even less. It'll be like division championships in baseball. Like, who cares? There's how many wild card berths now? Like, nobody cares.
There's a lot.
Just win an X number of games and you'll make it.
I would like to see nine. If you're going to have that many teams in your conference, you need more games in the conference. You know, I mean, 10 would be more.
I mean, they should be playing 10. Everybody should be playing 10, and there should be two non-conference games. But again, you're really starting to lose some of the fabric of, you know, again, what makes college football is intersectional rivalries where you're, you know, playing home and homes against LSU if you're UCLA. And they're not going to do that. They're not going to schedule those games anymore.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't make sense in a world where you're actually trying to compete for 12 playoff berths. It doesn't make sense to play those games when you're trying to compete for four and you actually have to worry about your strength of schedule and all that stuff. It matters. But when it's just counting losses, counting wins, it doesn't matter anymore. They're not going to do it.
There's too much of the counting losses, counting wins, but I would be fun if everyone had 9 or 10 conference championship games and then like a Big Ten SEC challenge to start the season. And you're like the number one teams play each other to start the season, you know, that kind of stuff, or maybe in the middle somewhere. That'd be cool. And then you'd have some data points across conferences. You know, if there was, 16 Big Ten versus SEC games one weekend, it's like, oh, the SEC won 9 of them or the Big Ten won. So, you know, whatever. It'd be kind of interesting to see that if that was the case. So I'd like that too.
Yeah. I don't think any of it's going to happen, but, I think we're going to be at 12 teams. Then they'll want to make more money, but they'll want to do it in some really stupid way like this one. And there'll be like an 18 team playoff or whatever. And we'll just continually expand and make the regular season meaningless.
Yeah.
Cool.
Mark agrees with me. He says, 10 conference games,
Let's table it. Let's table it for 2 years.
One cupcake and a Big Ten versus SEC matchup every year is where this is going. Two big conferences. See, I like it. All right.
Yeah. This is from Calvin Irvin Money. I believe it's Cal I Money.
Oh, this looks very serious.
A most serious concern regarding your recent pod.
Yeah.
Dear Mr. Abraham and Mr. Woods, your recent podcast has, regrettably, crossed a line that we feel warrants immediate attention. While we understand the sentiment behind David's enthusiasm for chocolate milk, we must take issue with his suggestion that it stands as the penultimate beverage of choice. This, we regret to inform you, is not only a highly exclusionary stance, but one that disregards the well-being of a significant portion of your audience. As 69.4% of the global population is lactose intolerant, we find the casual elevation of chocolate milk to such a lofty position to be, quite frankly, insensitive. Moreover, we must draw attention to a matter that extends beyond dietary needs, the undeniable and troubling impact of factory farming. The vast swatches of land used to house these operations are, for the most part, built on stolen indigenous lands, lands that have long been unjustly taken and exploited for agricultural purposes. The environmental degradation caused by these practices, including deforestation, water pollution, and the significant greenhouse gas emissions they produce, further compounds the issue. The suffering of animals in factory farms is a direct result of the greed that drives the system, and it is a system that... Why did I go Scottish? It's a system that we believe we must all reconsider in favor of more ethical and sustainable alternatives. It saddens us to see you have already sold out to shill for the Big Ten's big dairy barons so soon after they're joining their conference.
Ooh.
Given your position, and we presume your desire to maintain the loyalty of a wide audience, to assist in this conversation, allow us to offer our personal favorite chocolate milk alternative. I am quite partial to a 60-40 blend of freshly milked macadamia and walnut, carefully prepared with Dandelion's House hot chocolate mix. It's delightful, hot or chilled. This macadamia lends a silky, buttery creaminess, while the walnuts introduce an earthy, slightly bitter note, perfectly counterbalancing the chocolate's inherent sweetness. Dandelion is a local bean-to-bar chocolatier whose single-origin chocolates are crafted from ethically sourced cacao, each reflecting the distinct nuances of its origin. We do hope this message is received in the spirit of constructive dialogue and that it promotes a thoughtful reconsideration of your exclusionary beverage preferences on future episodes. To begin rebuilding our trust, what are your top 5 chocolate milk alternatives? Yours, with all due respect, Calvin I. Money, PhD, Department of Mathematics, Predictive Modeling of Monetary and Team Dynamics in the NIL Era.
That's awesome. And if you look at this, we had Matthew ask, like, what font conveys primeness? I mean, he's got the UC Berkeley seal, you know, brilliant together. It looks like an official email from Berkeley, from Cali Money.
It's beautiful.
It's pretty good. You did switch to Scottish.
I did go Scottish in the middle. I think I was trying to do like click Clipped Academia, but then it became Clipped Scottish very quickly. Alternatives to chocolate milk.
Are you an average?
I don't have any. So I'm like borderline lactose intolerant. Like I, you know,
there can't be that many people that are lactose intolerant. It's not 70% of the population.
Definitely not 70%. Is this a safe space with many thousands of people listening at some point? So I have pooped my pants as an adult. I had a big bowl of cereal with some milk, and I think the night before I'd had like ice cream. This is when I was like 25. Okay. And I'm getting in the car to drive to UCL to the Rose Bowl, actually. This is back when I covered games in person. And I went to go get gas. And I'm like, I kind of need to fart. So I do.
One of those.
But it wasn't a fart. And so I was living at home just after college. So I'm at the gas station and I turn around and I drive home and I'm like trying to elevate while I'm driving, you know, trying to keep my butt from touching the seat because I don't want it squishing around. And I'm like kind of step on the gas pedal because I'm doing it like that. It's very hard work. And I get home and I just said bye to my parents. Like I just said, I'm going to go to the game. And I come back in like holding my pants away from me, you know, like, you know, kind of like billowing them out as much as I can. And they just don't say anything to me. Like it was such a beautiful unspoken moment.
Yeah.
So I went to the bathroom in my pants and I discovered it. That was when I discovered I was low key lactose intolerant. However, my point here is, and there is a point. Don't worry about it. There is a point.
There's a point.
It's worth it. Chocolate milk is great. You can drink a little chocolate milk even if you're lactose intolerant. You just got to deal with the consequences afterwards. But it tastes great. And you know what? You know what you have to deal with consequences after drinking too? Alcohol.
Yeah.
It sucks too. It sucks real hard, you know? So, you know,
I'm feeling the effects occasionally. Yeah. The Christmas tree lighting or the pier lighting yesterday in Manhattan Beach. So tons of people were out there. I had a few drinks. Not feeling the perkiest this morning, but.
Crispy Bruin brings up a great point, which is that Cal fan did misuse the word penultimate, which means second to last, not last.
Yes.
I don't even think he was using it in that context. I think he was using it as like the prime, but that's not what it means either.
Yeah. It seems like it's an overused one. Okay. Oh, we got John and Brea. Thanks for the gift cards, John and Brea. By the way, I just picked up like 10 bottles of wine at Trader Joe's. So go get there's Platinum Reserve stuff in there. There's Pinot Noir and there's like I think it's a Bordeaux-ish kind of one from France. That's they're both $14.99. Just go look for those. You will not regret it. Good stuff. He says, "Dearest David and Ryan, I was thinking about Deshaun Foster's three pillars for the UCLA football program. Bless you." And David's call for perhaps a better pillar than, quote, respect. And I agree, respect should be a given. Whether it's for women, professors, football, or mythical Pac-12 power rankings, respect is essentially a non-negotiable, not a pillar. So I thought I would suggest a few alternatives to complete the three pillars of UCLA football, keeping discipline and enthusiasm. And please keep in mind, my sister went to UCLA. She's the smart one in the family. And I went to ASU, one of the largest public universities in the history of Earth. Suggestions for the three pillars of UCLA football. One is DBE, discipline, basketball, and enthusiasm. Let's not ignore the heart and soul of UCLA, the heart and soul of the UCLA athletics department. So basketball is a pillar.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Number two is DPE, discipline, parking, and enthusiasm. There's no greater sign of success than finding a parking spot on or near the UCLA campus.
I like it.
Do you like parking as a pillar?
Yeah.
We got extra letters here. DCME, discipline, chocolate milk, and enthusiasm. This applies to alcohol or any motivational word. We could all admit nothing is better than chocolate milk.
Well said, except for
Calamoni didn't agree.
Calamoni.
Yeah. He did not agree with that. And then DHASSFPE, discipline. How about scoring some freaking points and enthusiasm? I cleaned this one up for the kid in the Northwest who listens to the show. That's all I got. Go Devils. The Arizona Wildcats are dead to me. John and Brea.
Love it, John. I think I like DPE the best. Discipline, parking, and enthusiasm.
That's pretty good. The basketball one is good too because, I mean. Just being a basketball school. And...
All right, this is from Poot.
Poot, okay.
Question for the pod. Can Denny Killingham win Coach of the Year over Cignetti amid his historic massacre? No, I don't think so. I think Cignetti's got that pretty much sewn up at this point. But good old Denny is coaching his ass off this year. And he's out evaluated, I don't know, a million different teams, because that team is not constructed with a ton of NIL money, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
They're 8-2. They've got a pretty decent chance at the playoff right now. That is insane. They were starting a tight end at quarterback against UCLA last year, and they're nearly a playoff team this year. That's nuts. Denny Killingham, he's psychotic. He's very high strung. Meet Virginia is his favorite song ever. But man, he can coach some football.
Yeah.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Cignetti kills.
Yeah. But Killingham, we should, if we had more ASU stuff, we would have a Killingham drop for sure.
Yeah. We need one.
This is from the POC jock, POC coiference realignment. David, you mentioned your waning hairline. However, a new charity realigns hair from the Big Ten coaches to scalps in need. You gain a mane, you leave the coach bald. What luscious locks are you taking and leaving bald? Who's luscious locks? Sorry.
All right. So we got to rule out Deshaun because he's already bald.
Okay. No.
Lincoln
bald.
Riley. Does he even have a hairline? What's his deal? He just seems to have like his hats normal.
He has visors a lot. He's visors.
Yeah.
I don't trust visor guys with hair.
Dan Lanning's got a little boy regular ass haircut, but he seems like he's still got a full head of hair. So he's on the list. Jed Fish still has a really full head of hair.
Oh, right? Yeah. He's got some locks.
We don't have
any mullets, huh? It would be better.
How do you get talked into Jed Fish? All right, let's travel east. Matt Rhule seems like he's kind of in the same boat as me. Doesn't seem like that's sort of going away.
Yeah.
Kirk Ferentz, I mean, just the old guy hair.
James Franklin, no.
That's a no. Greg Schiano's got a decent head of hair, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, I think so.
Mike Loxley, pretty bald. Ryan Day, I have to imagine if he's dyeing his beard, he's also doing
hair.
Yeah,
that's true. There's questionable hair there. So
Jonathan Smith has a decent head of hair, but it does feel like it's receding a little bit. Kurt Cignetti, as we talked about, is a dye job. Brett Bielema, I think he's receding. Luke Fickle's got a good head of hair. He looks like he once had an Eddie Munster thing going on where the hair was like coming in over his eyebrows. All right, I think I'm not going to go through them all. I think I'll go with Jed Fish.
All right, Jed Fish's luscious locks. Very nice.
He's got decent locks. Am I misremembering? Let me.
No, I think so.
Let me pull up a Jed Fish. Hang on. Yeah, it seems decent. I mean, it's a little high, but I think it would look ridiculous if I suddenly had like a completely full thing going on. You know, I've got a 6 head. I got to be honest about it.
All right. So make him bald. So poor Jed's now bald heading into the Oregon game.
Yep. All right. Next up, we've got
is this Dave Young.
Yes. Okay. Earlier this year, you shot down my suggestion that Washington is QBU, saying my claim wins was the only stat that matters is wrong. Yet now your power rankings are clearly ranking teams just by wins. If wins aren't so important, why don't you notice in the Big Ten how Washington is number one in many metrics and top five in nearly every metric, including two of the five best QBRs are Washington players, QBU. Power ranking Washington below five is pure hypocrisy. How do you, and then it's wingdings. I for one appreciate Dave's performance art. I think it's a real quality aspect of this show.
Do we translate the wingdings? Like, is there a way to do that? Like, we have to.
I don't know if these are true wingdings. There used to be a way to translate wingdings, but I don't know if these are true wingdings or if this is just random characters on his computer.
Yeah. Thanks, David.
Appreciate that.
This is from Oxnard Steve. Cignetti gets paid when it comes to building a program, coaching players, and contract negotiation. Cignetti kills.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Cignetti kills.
And he's worth every penny. I'm happy for him, his team, and Indiana U fans who have never had much to celebrate when it comes to football. We Trojans are definitely upset with the recent state of our program, but we have been very fortunate to have so many great people and accomplishments over the last 100 years. And while I'm happy for Indiana, I'm much happier to be in Los Angeles, adjacent to that other program where their foster coach will probably be adopted long term now that the athletic director who hired him just got his contract extended. Well, not just. Maybe not just. Oxnard Steve. It was kind of all over the place, but he's taking a little shot at the Bruins for extending Martin Jarmond.
Yep. Yep.
But he's happy that Cignetti got extended. Yes, I think Indiana fans are as well.
It's beautiful. All right, this is from Frank. Call to action. Stand up against the Big Ten. Mm. This is an email to a bunch of different podcasts.
Oh, okay.
Should we read it?
I don't know. I haven't looked at it yet. Is it like spam or is it like actual email?
Oh, what the hell? Let's read it. Okay. Dear podcasters, now I can't believe my ears. Penn State, my Penn State, set to lose every tiebreaker to Oregon, even if they lose to a 6-5 Washington team? 6-5. This is absolutely, utterly, positively ridiculous. We've got a better strength of schedule, a better strength of record, a better combined opponent record, better quality losses. Don't forget the quality losses. And let's not overlook that we're a full-fledged, bona fide Big Ten member. And yet this, a single game, a singular rigged game against Ohio State is being used as the foundation for this absurd circus? I mean, come on. This is blatant bias. Blatant, I say. And if you think for 1 second I'm going to stand by and let this happen, then I guess you don't know me at all. We all need to rise up, not just for me, but for all of us. This is bigger than one game, folks. It's about fairness, transparency, holding teams accountable based on real metrics, actual measurable facts, not this arbitrary favoritism we're seeing here. And you know what? Maybe it's just Penn State this year, but next year, mark my words, it could be any one of your teams on the wrong end of this injustice. Any one of them. Oh, and before I forget, speaking of injustice, I recently visited USC for their game, and I tried one of those awful IPAs. You know the ones. They're the worst. David's right. People are just pretending to like them. Nobody really enjoys that. Nobody. The tiebreakers set at the start of the season, they don't even align with what we're seeing here. So how can we just let this stand? Let's get loud, people. Let's make some noise. Stand with Penn State.
Okay, so...
You know what I feel here? You know what I feel here?
Yeah?
This feels like a Washington fan to me.
It could be, but it's to us because he mentions you and your hatred of IPAs. But then also,
but he did send it to a million different podcasts.
So, like, at least we're the ones like that it's actually intended for, which is funny. Like, this was we're the main podcast in all of these podcasts that are listed there. Uh-huh. It is kind of funny. Like, assuming yes, like Oregon is going to lose to Washington. Like, I think there's a better chance that Penn State loses this weekend to Minnesota than Oregon losing to Washington next weekend. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
Yeah,
but this exciting email.
It's a good email.
I enjoyed that email.
Yeah, but it does feel like you said. It feels like a Washington fan. I don't think we want the SEO help. We have Chow Time. Chris wrote an email in. Thanks to everyone that wrote the emails. We got a bunch of them just in the last few days. We appreciate that. In the spirit of Rivalry Week, I have two questions. Norm Chow had a reputation as a killer offensive coordinator while he was at USC. His halftime adjustments were legendary. I remember being really excited when he came to UCLA. Why wasn't he able to have similar success as a Bruin?
Some of it was there was a real evolution in football that happened basically between the Carroll era and when he was at UCLA. I think that was a big part of it. I think he had also started to kind of lose his fastball while he was still at USC. I think towards the tail end, there was some talk that Kiffin and Sarkisian were having a much bigger role in the offense than and that's part of why they got switched to the co-coordinators or whatever. But I think also just major changes in college football where he was still running a system that had become perhaps a bit antiquated. And with USC level talent, you can get away with that. When you've got a bunch of super talent at receiver and you've got some great quarterback play at UCLA with what they were producing in 2008 and 2009, you couldn't. So I think it was a lot of things, but he never really achieved anything close to the same success he had at USC in that one stretch.
Yeah, I think I don't know if he lost his fastball at USC, but I feel like he Pete Carroll, I don't think he really liked that it was like Norm Chow's offense. He wanted it to be like USC's offense. And, you know, Pete Carroll was great, but I think his downfall was he wanted to create a coaching tree, like instead of going out and replacing. Like, Nick Saban's been able to keep it going forever because he loses a defensive coordinator, becomes the head coach at Georgia. He goes get somebody else that's like just as good or, you know, better. And I think Pete Carroll liked the homegrown aspect of it more. So Kiffin and Sark were more homegrown, and they become really good coaches. But at the time, you know, they were young. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the game changed some, but I think he could have stayed at USC and had more success for a few more years. But whatever, that riff with Pete Carroll just was a weird one. He says, which brings me to question two: of the players, coaches who've switched sides, Trojans to Bruins, Bruins to Trojans, whose betrayal paid off and who felt the kiss of Judas? Chris. From Chris.
Thank you, Chris. One that paid off. I mean, there was a stop in between, but Dwayne Walker, because he was what, a DB coach for USC at one time?
I think so, yeah. And then he was defensive coordinator.
And then a couple years later, he ended up the defensive coordinator for UCLA, and he clearly knew what USC was running inside and out, and that was the 13-9 game. So that one definitely paid off. And he was like, the entire reason they won that game was because Dwayne Walker knew exactly what USC was going to be running and, you know, had the defense there to stop it. Who else paid off? Kyle Ford definitely didn't. Kamari Ramsey kind of has, I would say.
I think he has. Was it Caleb?
Danton Lynn, I think, to some extent has.
Caleb Wilson, was he the, he became.
Caleb Wilson absolutely paid off for UCLA.
He was like a walk-on at USC, and his dad was a coach. But then,
yeah, and he became a very good tight end, went to the NFL.
He went to the NFL, yeah, so he was good.
Jay Tawia.
Yeah, Jay Tawia, he's really good. Kennedy Polamalu.
Not so good.
No.
That was the kiss of Judas right there. He was a good running backs coach, but Jim Mora never should have made him the offensive coordinator.
Trying to think of who else switched.
Ken Norton Jr. over at your side?
I mean, he was good. Like, well, I mean, that's one Pete Carroll created. I mean, he's actually become a good coach, right? Like, he's been a defensive coordinator in the NFL, and he was like a GA at USC. Like, that Pete Carroll gave him his first, like, coaching job, I thought. But he was a Bruin, though. I mean, he played at UCLA. He wasn't at staff. I think UCLA fans got pissed because he wasn't put on staff at UCLA, and Pete Carroll made something out of him. But that's one that actually worked out, but there was others the Rocky Settos of the world that Pete Carroll tried to create coaches out of, but it didn't really work out.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, there you go. And then we've got Kurt. Questionnaire for y'all. Howdy, David and Ryan. Got me a twofer question been stewing on. First off, as a Ducks fan who's been around long enough to know when to plant and when to harvest, got to ask, what in tarnation is going on with this Big Ten scheduling? UW gets 8 whole extra days of rest while them Ducks out here fighting for their lives against number 14 BYU. Big Ten's treating them boys worse than the Pac-12 ever did, especially with sorry-ass scheduling sending them up to elevation late November. Do you reckon it's high time for the Ducks to harvest our Big Ten weedings and eat up what old Dan Lanning's cooking, head down to the SEC where finally them might get us a little respect? Now, Friday will be off to Grand Junction for Thanksgiving week at Uncle Sam's place. You know, reckon might just go on ahead, roll on over to Provo to check the Ducks live for the first time and get my gobble up, that appetite up. Been fixing to try the local delicatessens, seeing as how you've probably been there for your fair share for that West Coast Blue religious school rivalry y'all got going on, and heard y'all partial to a good chocolate milk. Got any ideas where to rustle up the best chocolate dirty Dr. Pepper in them parts? Swig, so delicious, someplace more off the grid? Much obliged, Kurt.
Am I missing the BYU part?
I don't know what's going on here.
I like it, but they don't. They have a bye. Like, they're not playing BYU. But they get an extra day because they played on a Friday?
This might be a deep cut that I'm not getting, so let me look at BYU's schedule. Hang on.
Okay.
BYU has Arizona State.
Yeah, it's a big
Arizona,
one.
But it's in Tempe.
Yeah. That's a big one. I don't know.
I'm not sure I'm understanding. I did like it. I enjoyed the email. Grand Junction for Thanksgiving week. Okay. And then over to Provo to catch the Ducks live for the first time and get, not
help us in the chat if you got this.
Yeah. All if right. you understood what he was saying and you could make it through my accent work, that would help.
I thought you did a good job. All right. We did get a late voicemail. I have not listened to it. I know people were asking if the Zodiac Killer called in. It might be, but it's only a minute, so I'm guessing it's not. So here's the voicemail.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. Kind of your off-season previews for the conference. You guys were kind of floating the idea back and forth of and kind of going over the narrative of whether kind of the Pac-12 teams would be able to handle the physicality, and then going off of that, whether kind of the Big Ten defenses, how they would handle kind of the, I guess, creative offenses that the Pac-12 teams were going to bring, and kind of a quarterback play. And so I'm wondering kind of as your teams have gone through the season and just if you guys have had time to watch the kind of the Big Ten conference, has the level of play held up in terms of kind of the physicality and also just how do you think that's gone so far? Do you think the Big Ten has been able to kind of keep up with the creative offenses that the West Coast teams are going to bring? Or do you feel like the physicality was actually an issue? I'm just curious for your guys' thoughts. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for that.
I think it's been a mixed bag. I think so. When you're talking about the elite teams in the league, I think they've handled things just fine with the West Coast teams. Like, you know, Ohio State played a really competitive game against Oregon, but I didn't think it was something where they were struggling to keep up. And frankly, Ohio State is, you know, they're a high flying offense themselves. When I was saying that, I was kind of selfishly looking at it a lot through UCLA's lens, because there was always that identifiable stretch midseason where they were going to be playing Minnesota, Rutgers, Iowa, and Nebraska all in a row. And those struck me as teams where we're going to determine whether it's, you know, the physicality of line play or these kind of defense first oriented teams are going to be able to hold up against Pac-12 offense. The thing that didn't turn out right is that UCLA's offense took this year and decided to, you know, take a big old poop on the field like I did at a gas station when I discovered I was lactose intolerant. but even still, I'd say UCLA kind of came out ahead in those games, you know, and some of it was
beating
going
Iowa, you know, like,
yeah, I mean, yeah, beat Iowa, beat Nebraska, beat Rutgers, and, you know, came very close to beating Minnesota. But I think it's been a mixed bag. I think USC's had some difficulty with it. You know, they've had some struggles. I think Washington's had a little bit of difficulty with it, and UCLA's had a little bit of difficulty with it. So I think it's just been kind of an ebb and flow. I don't think we got really definitive answers about, you know, which thing's breaking. I will say schools like Iowa, Nebraska, it behooves them, and I think you saw that with Nebraska where they made an offensive coordinator change midseason. It behooves them to get their offenses a little bit more in line with what the old Pac-12 teams can do, but also what Ohio State can do. What, you know, some of these teams are getting better. I mean, Indiana, that's a different sort of offense than the Big Ten is used to out of Indiana too. Getting used to what all these teams are doing, I think it's important for kind of the old school offenses in the league.
Yeah, I mean, maybe even more important than like physicality versus like open offense has been like home and road. You know, it's been crazy. Like Washington loses on the road, wins at home. USC's same thing. And, you know, we've seen some teams try to open it up more. I think with the getting rid of the divisions, and you realize you can't just punt your way to trying to win a weaker division. You have to go out and try to win games. There's so many teams that you're opening things up more. And even like for USC, they've been more of a defense punting kind of, they've adjusted a little bit, you know, towards what Big Ten football is like. But yeah, I like the physicality stuff, we'll see, but it's almost like, can you go win those road games? And we haven't seen too many West Coast teams have to go play like in the snow or anything yet, but that could happen too. So we had a comment in the chat from Matthew, or question in the chat. What other games in the Big Ten would look good color on color like USC and UCLA? I don't want too many other games to adopt the idea. but would any look as good?
Like who even knows what uniforms Washington and Oregon would wear in such a game?
I think they might. Did I see a? I thought I saw something on Twitter that they might do something like that.
That'd be cool. I think all of them should do it. I think it'd look cool as hell.
Like Michigan, Ohio State.
Yeah, what the hell? Why not?
Well, Ohio State, you don't really have that like color kind of thing. Like it's like the gray or white. Michigan State, Michigan. Like the green and the blue?
That'd no, be cool. that would be tough.
You don't like that one?
No, it wouldn't look very good. The thing about the blue and the red is that they're both kind of, you know, vibrant colors the way they're depicted, and there's that cool contrast.
Yeah. Hold on. Kevin wrote in. Yeah, some of there's a lot of reds in the Big Ten too. So like you can't do like, you know, Wisconsin and Nebraska. It just wouldn't work. Sorry I'm late to the show. I just had to say I went against Ryan and Dave's picks for UCLA, Nebraska, Oregon last week. No dog food for me. It was all champagne and cocaine. All right. Well, that's good.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Baron, I'm glad you got your cocaine and champagne. Hookers and blow. That's what we try to promote here on the podcast of champions. So, but I mean, you can't go against me too much because I was 5-2 in my picks. So,
oh, geez.
5-2, baby. Hopefully we'll run it again. That'd be great. Do a little more separation from David as we count down to the final weeks of the regular season. But great stuff. Do you got anything else?
I don't. I am tapped. I am juiced. I am fully squeezed.
So we are unfortunately not getting our lunch because David Kidd is sick, lactose intolerant. I don't know if that's what it is. But hopefully she's okay. Mr. Woods being a good dad, staying home and taking care of the kid as we get ready for some rivalry games this week. And of course, yeah, hopefully Dave and I can get together. Maybe we'll tweet some stuff for the Indiana Ohio State game. And we both took Indiana plus 13.5. So we're going to wrap it up for David Woods. I'm Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.